Good morning, everyone. I'm traveling. I'm on the road today. And, this is the far side of the moon. I'm Jason Nemro, and thank you for listening. If you want to take a look at some of the collateral places, go to qix.me. You should find links there to all the other collateral stuff. And expand your listening enjoyment. I think that's a stretch, but thank you for listening anyway. My mom comes on the second Sunday of every month, and you have to understand, with autistic people, having things kind of granulated down to that level is really important. And I know it makes it sound really mechanical, but that's the way we are. She brings stuff, mostly reading material. Some of it really offends my wife. Especially the stuff that talks about, you know, how to raise your family and things like that. We should take that as a personal shot at her parenting style, but our parenting style. I'm always kind of in the middle because, you know, you don't want to take sides, but I will absolutely always take the side of my wife over my mother, because that's just the way it goes, and you can't do anything else. She brings us the LDS Church news. Don't forget to go and check it out, www.mormon.org, and know more about the LDS Church. Anyway, brings us church news, and there is another insert that comes with it. It's the Deseret News National edition. It comes out every Sunday. And the Deseret News is owned by the LDS Church, but it is not LDS Church organ. You know, it does not proclaim the official position of the LDS Church. Although, well, to be honest, the owner is never on the bad side of making the church look bad. Anyway, so read this article in the national edition of the Deseret News. Under normal circumstances, I would never really get that, because I don't tend to look at that kind of stuff. Except that it just shows up and it's on the dining room table in the morning. I had read on Saturday, on Sunday, an article that piqued my interest about Mormonism needs to, or it would be useful to look at Mormonism as the fourth Abrahamic religion. There are many, many arguments against this whole thing. I tend to actually accept the premise as it puts forth. It's actually put forth by I think it's a Methodist preacher who says, you know, we spend so much time lambasting Mormonism because it isn't our flavor of Christianity. And you go, honestly, it would help if we just didn't call it Christianity. And that was a decision that I came to some time ago, was that I thought everything could just settle down, and that Mormons could go around, you know, preaching Mormonism without all this hullabaloo. You know, if it was put on the same shelf by Christendom as Islam is, or Judaism, although Jews don't proselyte particularly at all. There's some factions that do, but by and large they don't. I think it's a basic problem that Christianity has. in that it says it can proselytize, but nobody else should be able to. That is funny. It's funny. And probably the first thing that Christians don't want to do is they don't want to look bad. You know? And I think it's funny because Mormons spend all their lives being looked at kind of funny. And, you know, you just have to get past that and say, you know what? I know you don't like me, and it's categorical. And I know that Christians are really kind of weird about stuff. Anyway, you know, and to be honest, all of us are about one thing or another. Christians expect everybody to see them as the great light of the world, and they get really, really weird when you point out obvious flaws. They do it happily to Mormons, you know. Say, oh, look, see, this is the reason why this can't possibly be true. The same thing can be said for them, but oh, man, you'd stir up a hornet's nest if you didn't. So, when it comes to how, you know, this is really funny, you know. Christians can dish it out, but they can't take it, worth a darn. You know. But you know, I, you know, some can, you know, you can't paint with too broad of a brush at all. Anyway, but that wasn't what I wanted to talk about, was about that thing. It's an interesting aside. Got a blog post up that I'm working on it, and then I read another article that was about, oh, what's it called? Slip learning. I am not happy with school deciding that learning is a good substitute for the word education. Math schooling, I call it that, and it's not my term, I didn't come up with it, but I like it because I think it's probably the most accurate. Math schooling has so damaged the term education that it's now searching for other words that haven't been so besmirched to apply to itself. As if it wasn't the organization doing the besmirching. I find that so funny. Just a whole level. Anyway, slip learning. Now, I read the article, I have to be honest. Most of the time I skim these things, you know, I'm not a real detailed reader, and people come back and say, I didn't say that. And so I'm the first guy to say, this was the impression I got from it, this is what it brought to mind. So that people don't go, well, you just weren't paying attention. You should pay more attention in class, and what I think that deserves is a slap in the head. To say, how dare you treat adults in the obnoxious and demeaning way you teach students. So the next time you do that, I'll slap you harder. I'm sorry. I'm going to take that crap. Some popped up, blown up. I've had 4 years of school, therefore I've got some sort of person. And you don't want to treat them too harshly because it isn't just them. It wasn't like they said, thou shalt treat me like God because I am a school teacher. And school teachers are the most amazing, wonderful, and fantastic people on the face of the earth. It isn't them that started saying that, although it's just so easy to pick up on. It's society that said it. Society, the school industry said it. So, when your doctor has a God complex, there's a very easy reason why they do it. It's because society has bestowed it upon them. You know, teachers, doctors, after 9/11, firefighters became gods, They really tried hard to make police into gods, but that's a really hard sell. Because police officers have a crappy job, and nobody likes it when they're actually doing their job. And not very many people like it when they're actually doing their job. So, there's that. Anyway, let me give you my take on flipped education. Very short, and I know that makes people upset because they really want it to be more. Oh, this nuance, you really have to understand. There's like this whole thing, and you have to. I think in the article we talked about implementing it slowly and not going whole hog into it, which I didn't really understand why that would be really necessary. Because it's such a simple concept. There really isn't that bad of an idea on its face. And it's very simply, at least I look at it this simply, you know, to the offense of all, that you do what would normally be called craft work at home, and you do what would normally be called homework at school. That's why it's called the classroom. That's an interesting concept. It tends to make a lot of sense. I don't have a problem with the whole concept in and of itself. Except that I think it produces a whole other opportunity for schools to get smarmy about what goes on at home. I will tell you once again, and I've said it in recordings and in writings over and over and over again, I will continue to, until the cows come home, the whole concept of homework indicates the failure of math schooling. The fact that when you have children in your total control for 7 hours, 5 days a week typically, in my place more like 8 hours or 4 days a week, ends up being about the same. Actually, it ends up being a little bit more. Well, I don't know. It doesn't matter. Anyway, if you have children sequestered for over 30 hours a week, and you can't get all the work done required to see to their air quotes here, education, you're a failure. And you don't want to sit there and blame teachers for it, exactly. Although I must say, and when I was starting to write the little blog post this morning about the whole thing, of course I got maniacally verbose, and I went nuts. About the fact that if you put yourself up as a lackey, as a minion of an institution, which is what a teacher is a minion of the mass schooling industry, you know, I'm sorry, you're just as culpable for their evils as the institution is. Don't sit there and defend it. Because, you know, the only teachers worth defending are those who are fighting that system, and good for them, hallelujah, praise the Lord. I understand you're taking a horrible risk because the industry will get you back. They will blackball you. And it happens about every day. Man, I tell teachers I tell people every day, especially kids, who say, I think I'm going to go to school and get a degree in education. You go, oh, why do that? That would be the most stupid thing. And they usually go, well, because there's always teaching jobs. They always need more teachers. And you go, no, they don't. Let me tell you, how many out-of-work teachers are there? How many people that have a degree in education and can't get a job? Or have to end up working in some kind of less than minimum wage aid? And this is coming from a guy. I just recently got released from my serfdom. And it kind of happened without me having anything to do with it. I was just sitting there minding my own business, and my boss called me and said, Jay, I've got good news or bad news. I'm not really sure how you look at it. And once I got done listening to him, and he said, your job is being redone, your title is being changed, and you are, you're going to be paid hourly instead of by salary. And I struggled with it a little bit because, frankly, it was easier to do my job as a salary person. I would get up early. I would leave early and go into the office and do whatever I do at the office. Sometimes I just kind of do whatever, you know. And I do mostly what I used to do that got me to this point, you know, to where people said, oh, Jay's really good at computers. I just continue to do those kinds of things. And, you know, so I don't feel like it's a bad thing. I just do it over and over and over again because I'm autistic and I'm obsessive. And that's just the way it is. So now that I'm an hourly worker, I have finally realized that I'm not a serf anymore. You know, it isn't about the job anymore. I go in at a certain time and I stop doing it at a certain time. If the job's not done, well, tough luck. The clock is, you know, the timed exposure is more important than the job, and that's new for me, and I'm struggling with it. Except that the marvelous thing I found out is that I'm actually spending more time with my family. I'm actually making a more pointed effort being home. Not leaving home early, not coming home late, all those things are kind of getting cut down because I can't technically do them anymore. And frankly, it's fantastic. It means that if I have to travel, like today I'm traveling to Las Vegas, and you know, if I'm gone for 2 hours, 2 hour ride, I know I'm going to be there around 10 o'clock. I know I'm going to have a full lunch in there because I have to now, you know. I'm only paid for 8 hours, you know, I'm not paid for nine. I can't work through lunch. They leave, I've got to leave. I know in this case I'm going to have to leave at 3 because, you know, I've got to be basically off duty at 5, period. And so, you know, I am off at 3, or if I have to go over, I have to stay till 5, I've packed up my stuff, I'll have to overnight. If they go, well, that's not, no, wait, it's only 2 hours to home, just go home. I mean, you'll be there at 7, and you go, ha ha, no. This is, my job is to, you know, 8 to 5. You know, and it's got to be an extreme circumstance that demands that. So if I stay longer, and if I have to stay past 3, I've got to overnight, and I'll have to make up for, you know, and it'll have to be made up for someplace else. Anyway, so it's all very interesting, and you have to understand that in the school industry, teachers are serfs. You know, and let me tell you, you know, are they gonna defend their lord? Golly, yes. You know, and there's a whole loyalty issue. You know, superintendents, principals demand loyalty, and sometimes that loyalty is more important than anything else. In fact, you'll commonly find this in school. Even if you're an excellent teacher, if what you do doesn't make your principal look good, if you find that you have to be sneaky or go up against the school administration, you know, chances are it doesn't matter how good of a teacher it is, it doesn't matter how much the parents love you, it doesn't matter how much the kids are learning, that really doesn't matter. You will be gone because your principal doesn't want you around. That's why people say, oh, teachers are so wonderful, and you put them up on this pedestal. They are the ultimate people who sacrifice. And you go, well, no, they don't. Says, and if they do, they do a disservice to so many other things. And we tend to, and we also tend to give a godlike status to them that, number one, they don't deserve. And number two, nobody should have thrown at them, because the school industry uses that perception to make you do more, to get you into doing more, spending more of your time, giving more of your life up for them. You know, and we fall, you know, we damage so many people, but then we tell them how wonderful they are. Kind of like doctors. Doctors take a lot of crap. Or at least they used to. Now we find doctors being far kinder to themselves. And the whole godlike staff of doctors has suffered because they make vows to God. You know, you sit in their waiting room for 5 hours and you start looking around and you notice that the people aren't moving. And you go, what's going on? And you go, oh, the doctor isn't even here. And you go, where is he? And you know, they really can't say. They can say, oh, well, he's the hospital figure. But there's a reasonable chance that he's out playing golf because with his God status, he wouldn't get free time. He wouldn't get free time. He would die, you know, I'm sorry. Doctors, for the people who are harping on everybody else about their health, they're probably the most unhealthy people I think I know. Most nurses I know are chain smokers, you know, and they die young because they just have to do that, you know. How many nurses are strung out on the kind of drugs you would expect from rock stars? It's because they have to constantly be pushing, constantly have to be going for it. They constantly have to live up to this unrealistic expectation. And that's our biggest failing with people like this. For doctors, for nurses, for... frankly, what I'm hoping to talk about in this particular recording, teachers, is that we expect way too much out of them. And let me tell you what that translates into, and why there is this flipped classroom thing going on, and why, even though it might improve things, bad thing. Because it doesn't address the root problem. Which is, we expect way too much of teachers, and, sadly, teachers expect way too much of themselves. And they need to know, they need to be able to put things in proper perspective. Teachers should be hourly workers, and we treat them so much differently. But right now they're not. They are servants. They're slaves. And that's sad. And that's sad. Although, lionized worship, you know, we treat them so well. We hold them in such high esteem that many, many children who have been schooled want to become teachers. And teachers don't do anything to hold it down. I think I made kind of a sidelong attack on Barack Obama because some people thought he was Superman. Some people thought he was the Messiah, and he was drinking that Kool-Aid too. He wasn't telling anybody he wasn't the Messiah. I mean, he would try to put some false modesty into it. Oh, please, you know. I didn't bend 50 steel bars today. I only bent 20. You know, kind of crap like that, you know. We expect way too much teachers, and we build up the institutions, the industry, the mass schooling industry, feeds off of that. We help build up that industry keeps painting that picture and keeping the picture clear and vibrant of all that. And you have to understand the churn of people that go into teaching and that go out of teaching because, you know, we expect them to be God. And they're not. You know? The picture of the spinster teacher that never had children herself and that probably never got married, but who practically adopts the children in her class to be her children and, you know, showers gifts on them. You know, taking it away from her own, you know, sacrificing feeding herself so that she can do wonderful things for the poor misbegotten ragamuffin children that are in her classroom that she has to take care of. That is the ultimate picture of the perfect and godlike teacher, you know, who doesn't have a life outside of. And it's bad. It's wrong. Most teachers don't want to be that kind of person. Don't want to give up that much of their lives. It's kind of like having a working mother. You know, we try to lionize the working mother. Say, oh, look at how much all the great stuff she does. She works so hard. She goes and brings home the bacon and fries it up in a pan. Never, never let you forget you're a man. You're going, that's too much. That's too much. We're asking for too much out of these people. And that's the core problem. But the flipped classroom doesn't address that at all. In fact, it's trying to niggle things around, trying to make things more efficient because of the way schools are. Schools used to get away with a lot of stuff because you really couldn't, you know, we really could monitor this stuff to a certain decimal point, or we chose not to. I'm not sure how it used to be, but actually, children seem to learn better and seem to do better, be more well-rounded. And it's interesting to see now we've gotten into testing children so much more and doing it so much more exactly and doing things like that, we actually find out that children are actually suffering worse. We try to make ourselves feel better than say, oh, school always had these kinds of problems, but you know what they didn't? They didn't have these problems. We just weren't measuring it back then. If we would have seen the problem so much earlier before, you go, you know what? The problem is the fact that we're looking at it so much. Of course, teachers are fighting for that to stop happening, and they look like, you know, self-centered jerks. Well, they said, we don't need to be evaluating teachers. No. And it comes down to that. Teachers are evaluated by the success system. It's a whole new focus on student success. Taking the responsibility away from the individual student for, number one, what defines success, number two, for getting good grades. It was, you know, the onus was typically on the kid. The teacher was there to lecture, to show, to demonstrate, and to a certain degree, to test. As we shifted that more toward, you know, student success and if you don't have enough kids in your classroom that are succeeding, your butt's on the line, your school's butt is on the line. You know, it's really kind of interesting to watch how evil that translates itself to teachers. And I'm not trying to save teachers at all. I think teachers, to a certain extent, have brought on this kind of scrutiny, and I would be the first one to say, hey, you know what, you should go to like the Sylvan Learning Center and go and become a math tutor. Of course, teachers would say, I won't do that because you're not paying enough. And you go, sadly, I think they're probably paying for what the market will bear, and frankly, Sylvan probably has to pay too much because it has to bring decent teachers, decent tutors from a really slumped up and high paying teaching profession. You know, teachers are grossly, let me tell you, and I don't mean to pray for this, teachers are grossly overpaid! Grossly, grossly, grossly overpaid! Parents would gladly do what teachers do for free. And that's the market. And I'll tell you why I come from that, and why I say that, and how, you know, and I'm not going to say why it's offensive, because everybody knows why it's offensive. I came from childcare. I came from babysitting. Let me just lay out exactly what I came from. I came from babysitting. I went to school to be a professional babysitter. And I know that offends everybody, because my actual degree plan said that I was a child development, or I was doing early childhood education. And most of what that was doing was trying to bring little kids into the school structure through saying how important the teacher was, and that the teacher needed to be paid on par with school teachers, regular school teachers. Sorry. And I learned a whole lot from that whole process. Because the justification for how much they were hoping I was going to get paid, which never really materialized, childcare as an industry, child development, you know, preschool education stuff is a luxury product for the rich. Everybody else treats it as it should be treated. It's just sitting, babysitting. You know, I was going through a lot of things. We had to have lesson plans, units. We used to call them units. You know, about how, when you're going to teach this topic and that topic and stuff like that. And basically, and let me tell you, I was totally in favor of the babysitting concept when it came right down to it. After it was all done and said and done and over, the whole point was, and I have to walk away from it, it wasn't a conscious choice I made to walk away from it. It was the fact that I had to make some more money than that. And, I was competing with grandma, you know, who was perfectly willing to take care of her grandkids for free for nothing as a family service, which is right and good. And you'll learn just as much from a grandparent, a totally uneducated grandparent, that doesn't sit there and plan out the day down to the minute with what child development is supposed to be. They're supposed to make all these plans. It was a whole thing to try to professionalize childcare. I'll use the easy term for it, to make it simpler for you. You know, it was a great effort to professionalize childcare. Ultimately, I think they just learned that, you know, and said, the only way you can do it is by having school do it. It's kind of a political football. It's not really going to work. You know, anybody who tries to say that we need to put 3 and 4 year olds, or even 2, 3, 4 year olds, into structured, you know, structured, air quote, learning units, stuff like that, is just stripping away humanity all that quicker. And, you know, and I'm sorry, kids who sit with grandma and grandma read them stories, sadly, the new reality is that we so often don't even do story reading anymore. We don't do any of that. You know, my kids learn to read by my wife and I, and maybe my grandmother, my mom, reading to them. And, you know, I said, it didn't require a structured, oh, we have to do this. Today we're going to work on the letter R. It didn't require phonics on stuff, and I'm sorry, when people talk to me about how important phonics is, or whole words, blah, blah, blah. You know what? That's just a bunch of hooey. And I mean, I've had people that just said, oh, this is a salvation to life. You know, I don't know phonics to save my life. And frankly, it's been so long since I even studied noun, verb, adverb, blah, blah, blah. I don't even really think along those lines anymore. Because I write the same way I read. I try to read good things, and so I write that way. And I don't think it's because I understand, and I came up with the different symbols for the sh sound so that people could sound things out, because English doesn't make a lick of sense, and was never meant to, and I know people are trying desperately to make it so that it does. There's been things put out there that says that we need to change English so that it's more sensible, that it's more phonetic. And at this point, I don't see any point in doing that, because most people can figure it out. You know, it doesn't take a lot of training, it doesn't take a lot of learning. Oh my gosh, one of these guys who bought one of these 5-acre lots is finally doing something with it. Oh, amazing! Anyway. That's kind of where I come from. So, when I say things like, school smacks way too hard of just glorified babysitting, I say that from the standpoint of being, I'm sorry, I have been a professional babysitter. I know what babysitting looks like. And that's what school basically is. Are you learning anything? Well, sure, you're going to learn in any setting. If I stuck you in a closet and beat you every night, you'd learn a lot. It has to do with a lot of other things. Now, that's just deprivation, that's evil. I'm not saying that's what's happening in school, but I'm saying that school, as an industry, is absolutely taking something that doesn't require hardly anything at all except access to books. You know, I think we should replace every school with just a good library. And frankly, now that we've got all this electronic stuff, I don't even think we have to do that anymore. We need to have, you know, we need to point out the places on the internet where you can get books for free. On the internet, it's, you know, the electronic sort. Electronic books for free on the internet, there's tons of them, and there's more being added every day. We're still trying to bring all the stuff that's now in the public domain, the stuff that's more than, like, 100 years old, that's fallen into the public domain. We're still working on getting all that stuff. But online, haven't even scratched the surface, although there's some amazing stuff up there. It's all totally free, as long as you've got internet access. And the great part is, most parents, most families, number one, already have internet access, and number two, already have the materials to be able to do this. And the price is continually coming down. It's absolutely stark-ravingly amazing. We absolutely do not need school, period. Most teachers should be fired just because they're irrelevant. They're redundant. We don't need them. And that's not to say that these people aren't wonderful resources to go to say, hey, you know, I want to learn about math. You go, okay, let me teach you about math. Now, frankly, the problem is the school industry has touted teachers who basically have 4 years of very limited experience in anything. We've treated them so highly that I'm sorry, the person that you would get to say, hey, will you teach me math? They hardly know math themselves. You would do just as well reading a textbook on the subject than you would be to see somebody up there actually going through the motions for you. Teaching has sadly become, especially math schooling teaching, primary and secondary teaching, has become the most egregious example of monkey work I think there's ever been. Most of them are simply proctors. Most of them are simply reading textbooks and throwing stuff out there, applying what little understanding they could catch, and I'm not denigrating them at all. We all have limited understanding of this stuff. We just think that teachers are blessed by God or something to have such deep understanding of this, and you go, no, they don't. And in fact, both your teachers, you know more about the subject than they do. They just have textbooks, and they have it in an organized way. And we seem to think that having it organized and pulling it from a textbook, that's all the teachers end up really doing, and more so every single day. They may be disciples of one process or another, and that's where this whole flipped classroom thing comes through. It's just a change in process. The fact that it solves some of the schooling industry's problems with it, you know, it makes test scores go up. Probably because people are getting more personalized attention. But guess what? Families can do that too. Families can even do that better. It always will be. That's why homeschooling is always, always does a better job than mass schooling. And I don't care how much teachers hate it. I don't care how much the industry hates homeschooling. It will always be better. The only time schools had some sort of purpose is before there was a printing press and you actually had to go to a mathematician to learn math or go to a great orator to learn oration, you know, because you couldn't get this information from any place else. Now, that information is practically free. It's out there. You know, you can buy a book. You know, there was a time when they said, oh no, you know, you could buy textbooks. You know, they ended up being the font of knowledge was textbooks. And it was a sacred thing. Only teachers could touch textbooks. Students would have to check them out from their teacher. There was a special teacher's edition, and let me tell you, those were guarded like gold. Fort Knox doesn't have security like schools do over the teacher edition of a book. That, if you look at it, you flip through the thing, there's nothing to it. There's nothing to it. A moron could go through the process. A moron could follow the procedure, take up the tips and stuff like that, a moron could do it. Sadly, that's what teaching kind of produces, kind of a moron class that is lionized. And the most important part of teacher education is to convince those who are teaching how fantastic they are, and how necessary they are, and how wonderful they are, and how absolutely, you know, and let me tell you, most of teaching curriculum has nothing to do with education. It has everything to do with crowd control. It has everything to do with classroom management. It has nothing to do with education. It has everything to do with dealing with children who, in large groups, who are sequestered together in prison-like circumstances. You'll spend, you know, and the time needed to indoctrinate you toward that. That was where I failed as a teacher, is that I didn't have that background or that teaching. You have to understand. And it's very, you know, and it's very obvious. Teacher education courses don't take into account, oh, well, I've been in here for 30 years, and I am going to, you know, and I want to teach engineering to 17 and 18-year-olds. Let me tell you, they aren't going to give you a teaching certificate for being good at what you're going to teach. Because that's not what teaching is about. Teaching is about, you know, how to manage a classroom. I think in the old days they only used to have one class on this. And I think it came from the fact that kids were expected to be more accommodating, that kids are supposed to be more respectful. And, you know, most people decry the fact that that's probably the worst thing that's happened in society, is that kids don't respect teachers anymore. And my contention is, I'm really confused why they should in the first place. It says, you know, I understand how the school day and the school institution runs better if kids are more respectful to teachers. But I think in the old days that was more of an extension of being respectful of parents. That every adult was basically told that they needed to, every kid was taught that every adult in life should be given equal, semi-equal standing with their parents. And parents had to be respected. You know, it was in the Bible for Pete's sake. You know, everybody taught that. You respected your parents. And I think the great, so horrible thing is that parents are so roundly disrespected now, and so roundly blamed for all the problems in all the world. I'm not thinking they don't come from, but they've been so denigrated, and so many other institutions, people, have been trumpeted as being superior to parents, and required much more of your respect than parents do, that's what's ultimately happened. If you're saying, well, we've got a discipline problem at school, and you go, I'll tell you exactly why, it's because you guys don't respect parents. Is that those at the head of families are disrespected totally by you people. And the really sad part is, many teachers are parents, but let me tell you, when they go up against their kids, you know, the typical struggle that you have if your kids don't respect their parents, those teachers pull out the teaching credentials and say, look, you have to respect me, I have a degree in teaching. They, even with their own children, throw away their God-given right to respect as a parent and replace it with a stupid credential that 4 years of indoctrination was supposed to make them eligible for. Oh boy! you know, you need to have more respect for me because look at how good of a teacher I am. You know, oh, parents are garbage, but teachers are God. Teachers are wonderful, sacrificing people, and you must respect it above all of me. He goes, that's where it comes from. It comes from something artificial. That we think this artificial thing is so much better. Guess what? I said, I'm sorry, you know, people say, oh, you need to respect teachers. Teachers are, you know, teachers are teaching our future. And you go, you know what? They won't be for much longer. I said, because more and more people are choosing to stay away from school because schools are dangerous places. Schools are places that are out of control. Filled with weird people that have different kind of things and that don't necessarily even except community standards, much less family standards. I don't think school is ever meant to become enemies of school. I mean, enemies of family. It just kind of worked out that way as the institution, as the industry, sought to, you know, get more power, get more ability. That's what started happening. And that's what brings me back to the thing I was talking about. It's really interesting how everything I'm kind of thinking of brings me back to family ascendancy. We've got to put family first. Parents have to be the ultimate thing. Kids know that their parents aren't fantastic and perfect. Kids know that, or what they learned over time. But I think that's made up for so much by, and I know that there are so many times when this isn't true and it's sad, that it's made up for by love and by concern and by trying to do better than the generation before you did. You know, it's rare. It is truly rare to find parents who authentically hate their children. Authentically want their children to go away. And when you do find people like that, it's easy to find the villains that made that happen. Either their parents, their own parents were abusive, or they trusted too much to society, or, you know, locked down their kids in front of television because it was just easy. And, you know, because you don't spend time reading to your kids. You don't spend enough time listening to your kids. To try to help them, to try to bring them something. Try to weigh whether this is good or whether this is bad. To actually make critical decisions. Something that we absolutely have to have parents doing. But they have to choose to do it. It can't be pressed on them externally. You can't have some government come in and say, oh, you need to do this, 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 and we're going to monitor you, and we're going to make sure you do this right. That doesn't work. You know, the best, you know, the most important thing we can hope for is for government to stay the heck out of families. Stay out of families, leave them alone. Quit trying to trump up other institutions being good. Let me tell you, I said, you know that being gay is a fake lifestyle. You know it's fake because they have to appeal to government for legitimacy. Families don't have to do that. Families can today say, you know what, I'm not going to do what government wants me to do. And all of a sudden, they'll find out that they can get away with that. That's the power. I mean, sure, there's child protective services, sure, there's police, there's all those things. You know, you're just going to have to find your way through those circumstances. Let me tell you, it's heinous and evil. I can tell you my own story, but I'm not going to. Today, I think I already did a couple of times. I'm not going to try to do it again. So when it comes to Smith's classroom, I find that I don't really care. You know? Oh, wow, you know, it's just so interesting I thought. I said, you know, that's an interesting idea. It doesn't solve the basic problem. The basic problem is school already demands too much time. School already demands too much of a kid's thought, time, effort, everything else. Has put into the hands of politicians, put into the hands of different groups that tend to decide what is an appropriate curriculum. It is not put in the parents' hands. Every parent should own school. Every parent should own school. All of them. All of them. If we could just get back to the old-fashioned thing of some itinerant teacher, mostly a starving person, who says, you know what, I will teach your kids for food and free. And they put that school teacher up in the attic, and they would teach them that way, you know. If you get much beyond that, if you build a building for them, if you do stuff like that, you start having weird problems. If families ever lose, and they already have, fight's already lost now, for the education industry, you know, it's over. And to have government dictate to you what an appropriate education is laughable. It is so moronic that it is almost to make one bust a gut for just how would you idiots have any clue whatsoever? I'm sorry. I don't care how many experts you get together to do it, because it's going to be influenced for evil. How on earth did Earth Day become a school holiday? It is a school-dictated holiday done because environmentalists have a lot of clout in many governments. And that's how they chose to, and that's how they choose to spread their doctrine. It's religion. And being done at schools is evil. And what makes it evil is the first line of it. The first line of it. It's the school. They got to go into school and say, here's your curriculum, here's what you're going to do. Poor hairy teacher that says, you know what? I really don't want to have to sit down and write out a lesson plan for this and this and this. Can I just get a lesson plan? You know, the lesson plan is being done. How come I have to craft it? And the environmental movement says, oh yeah, we'll give you a nice curriculum. Because it's in our best interest to do that. And you know what? If families want to do that, if they want to screw up their kids to that level, that's up to the family. Because the family ultimately has to pay the price for that. If that kid is an absolute bimbo, dipstick dumbass, that can't do anything but spout a bunch of platitudes about environmentalism, you know what? If that's what that family decided was the most important thing for that kid to learn, you know what? That's the price they'll pay. They'll have a 30-year-old kid spouting environmental concerns that doesn't make any money. And that doesn't, you know, and it doesn't contribute to the family income. And that's fine. If that's what that family wants to do, that's cool. But they're going to have to do it on their nickel. The funny thing about school is once you get these things stuck into schools, you know what? The school doesn't pay a price for it. School doesn't pay a price at all. And those organizations that put together the curriculum that pay to get them into school, they don't pay either if it doesn't work. They don't pay. It's the families. It's those kids. They don't care. So when those guys come back and go, oh, STEM is the most important thing, science, technology, engineering, and math, Yes, understand, that's a political decision. Somebody at some level said, oh, you know what? We'll have a richer, more burdened economy as a nation if we have more engineers and scientists and people that work on computers and blah, blah, blah. And so now there's all this money being thrown at it. There's, you know, most kids are being shuffled through this thing to almost force them into these kinds of fields. What are they really getting out for that at all? Whether it's really important to them or not. Whether it really contributes to the family cluster. If a family already has a technology person, why on earth do they need another one? You know? If you've got a family to keep the computers running, why on earth do you need another one? That's why people say, well, aren't you teaching your kids about computers? I said, no. And you go, why not? They're really not that interested in it. Cale said a couple of times, Dad, I want to learn how to make computer games. I said, okay. And I shoved the book at him and said, you have to learn all about this stuff. But he didn't seem interested. Well, there it is. He says, I'm not going to sit there and make their life miserable trying to point me on them. That's not what I'm here for. My kids, you know, I'm much more concerned about when they get a little bit older. You know, Josh is starting to get really good at this cartooning, and you go, you know, it says, keep doing it, man. Keep doing it. Says, I don't know what kind of money that'll generate later. Says, well, that's okay. Says, you know, work on your talent. See, and a family can do that where a school really can. A school has a process and a thing, you know, it's got all the same classes, state says exactly what class you're supposed to have, you're about a few electives, the most important thing is to be well-rounded, you know how I am about being well-rounded. As an autistic person, we suck at being well-rounded, and thank goodness I grew up in a time when these things weren't for structure. I hope and pray that my kids don't send their children to school much. I hope and pray that we can make changes that these things can change. The fact that there is homeschooling is wonderful. Whatever weird barriers they put up, like in New Mexico, and this is pretty much true throughout the country, and it is most definitely and absolutely a bone to the mass schooling industry, is the thing that if you homeschool your kid, you can't assign off, you know, you can't get together with other families for various things. It's actually encoded in most of the laws, and you can't do that. You know, it starts feeling too much like competition for school. The whole point of homeschooling is that we can't really stop you from doing it, although they really love to, and they love to find a way to justify that. I'm sure they've got lawyers working on the problem, trying to kill off homeschooling, trying to find ways to justify that, saying that homeschooling's bad. They really don't exist. They run up hard and fast against what little research has been done that says you don't want to do any more research on the whole issue of which one's better because you'll lose. The schooling industry will absolutely start randomly lose. Because homeschooling is just so much superior. And the funny thing is it doesn't have to do with textbooks cheated, it doesn't have to do with the kind of thing to do. It doesn't even have to deal with whether you're flipping your classroom and stuff like that. It doesn't have anything to do with any of that. Nothing at all to do with that. It has to do with other things. And that's what's so amazing about it, because they keep going, well, you know, shouldn't kids learn more if we're constantly squeezing them, if we're constantly putting more pressure on them and stuff like that? You know, no. These are people. I know they don't want to treat them like that. They want to treat them like products, you know. If we flip it through this program, and this program, we'll get this result out of it. And the frustrating part is, you know, you don't get that kind of product very often. People just simply aren't that. I know that that totally flies in the face of everybody who wants to support the school industry. You know, teachers included. And I know teachers who say, yes, I know these things are true, but this is my job. And said, please don't poke holes at my job. And you go, why not? And you go, how do you sleep at night knowing that you're living a lie? You know, and I'm not saying that you're being evil. But then, you know, you got sold a bill of goods, you got taught that these things were fantastic, and then you found out one day that you being a functionary of the school industry actually does more harm to children than it does good. That our society is so dead set against family. It wants to rip families apart and use the constituent people and the money that families can amass and things like that for other purposes. You know? The whole concept of human resources, everybody who says human resources needs to be shot. Every single one of them. We should beat them slipping it into their lives. I think we should bring back public meetings. You know? I really do. But I want to be the person to determine who gets the public meetings. It'll usually be for things like, you know, I try as much as possible to institute something akin to a public meeting. Or use the word fair. Because I'm sorry, fair is used to initiate so much evil that it is bad. Don't use it. Same thing with the word crime. I know people say, oh, you know, we need to stay away from crime. Well, yeah, absolutely. But it's evil. It gets used so much more for evil than for good. It's better just to excise it from our lives. Don't do it. You know. Understand that what your child becomes is basically has a lot to do with your child. Parents can do a whole lot. Parents are the most influential people in their children's lives. The sad part is that as institutions seek to gain more power in the lives of children, people, whatever, that they still don't take the place of parents. Parents sit back off. It isn't that school or teacher or doctor or nurse or firefighter or police officer takes the place of parent. Nobody does. Nobody can take that place. And any time we think they should or we think that they must fill a role that parents should be filling, that becomes the essence of the problem. That is the crux of it. When any of this feels like they have to step in like that, that's a problem. And you don't solve the problem by eliminating the family. You don't. You can't. It can't be done. There are no substitutes for parents. The lives of children. There is no substitute for the family, period. Every time it's tried, bad things happen. Every time it is tried, bad things happen. If I said that twice with enough expression to make it big enough, I'd like to say the third time, but I fear I can't recall what it is. And it doesn't matter what instrumentality it tries to do. It doesn't matter how much power that instrumentality can bring to bear. It doesn't matter how much money that instrumentality can bring to bear. It doesn't matter any of it. Bad things will happen. Bad things will happen. Oh, man, I'm repeating myself up. But I need to. It's important. No other instrumentality. No other instrumentality. In some circumstances, we simply have to acknowledge the fact that something that is substandard is just going to have to do. You know, whether it is foster parenting for kids who have such atrocious parents. One of our greatest sins is that we are way too willing to label families as broken. And it tells us some wonderful criteria to be able to do that as societies and as governments. And it's gone too far. Because we really need to pull back on that. Are children going to, on some level, be abused part of their lives? Yeah. Are some children going to be going to fit the definition of neglected? I'd have to say most children. And the fact that we use these flippantly, as criteria for breaking up families is a sin, and we pay a price for it. We pay a price today for our over-willingness to do this. And we must pull back. We must pull back. If you have a fleet of social workers in your town whose job is to basically look for brokenness, let me tell you, social workers love school. Social workers love school. That's where they get half of their work. More. I would say that's where they get 3/4 of their work. It's from that. They love teachers because teachers will turn in a family. Say, you know what? This kid's not doing very well in school. I think there's something bad happening. Let's go and look at it. So let me tell you, society does its darndest. It does its damnedest. Let me go ahead and use the current word. Does its damnedest to destroy the family, to set up circumstances, and to blame, to put blame on family. Look, see what happened. You know, this guy worked at a horrible job that we put out there for him, totally unfulfilling, totally doing like that. We make circumstances hideous for him to have his own, you know, to do his own job and to make, and to come up with a circumstance that works well for him. We've totally gotten rid of craftsmen in our society because we would rather have punched out, manufactured plastic stupid crap rather than have a finely crafted thing. We've done all these wonderful things that says we have taken away people's souls from them, and then we're all confused with this guy who we've totally stole his soul away and beat up on him and make him live a horrible circumstance, tax him to death, you know, make it so he can hardly feed his family, gets frustrated, strung out, crazy, and then when he starts acting out against the only people that he can act out against without getting shot or killed or beat up or fired over, which is his wife and his children, once he starts doing that, school comes and says he's going to take his children away, tell him how horrible and terrible he is, he turns to crime and stuff like that because he feels like he can't do anything else. Don't you understand, this is a script. This is a script. It adds just as readily as a school will try to script out of kids' day and say that this is good for them. Society has scripted out most people's lives and tells them that they better come to grips with it, and if they don't come to grips with it adequately or well, we're going to destroy their lives. You know, they are going to end up doing crimes that, frankly, we made up. And I will most assuredly and most happily put the fault in society's hands. And their main instrument, government, employment, school, all these little functionaries of society. And the fact that we've let this happen, but you know what? We can easily walk away from it. I would love there to be a sign. And that's, I guess, what this book hopes to become. The Descendant Family book is almost a sign that says, My family is supreme. My family is sovereign. And that you are not allowed to touch this family without this parent's permission. And if you don't have it, you can't do it. I don't care what instrumentality you produce. And I know that will mean that some kids will just become virtual slaves to an evil parent. I know that will happen. I know that there will be terrible stories. And the fight is, but you know what? I would rather reset that fight. I'd rather reset that fight and try to start over again and find better ways ahead. That's why I talk about the grand reset. Because I don't think we can pull back from what we've done gradually. I don't think we can do that. I think we need to. You know, and whose fault is it? It ends up being, you know, people love to blame the voters. People love to blame families for the fact that this is needed. This is what happens in broken families, you know. It happens like this, and this is what causes it. And you go, no, it's always one step back from that. It says, who is one step back from that? Who profits from broken families? Who profits profits from those things? And you go, leadership. Your leaders. They are to blame. And it becomes a dual need. Two things have to happen. Number one, good people have to get that kind of power. And if that means that's life. Good people have to take power. And number two, good people have to give, as far as humanly possible, that power back to them. Good people have to shoot themselves in the foot. They have to do whatever it takes to get there. And that's why, I guess, I voted for Mitt Romney. I think Mitt Romney would have made a great leader. Sad to say, I don't know if he would have shot himself in the foot. That's why I love Ron Paul better. Because I know that Ron Paul would shoot himself in the foot. I know Ron Paul would seek to eviscerate government, would seek to put me, and would seek the freedom of individuals. I know he would do that. So we need to find places where this could happen. We need to get the right people. If the right person, me, fine. I'm the right person. Empower me, and I will destroy government. And I will give you a pledge. My pledge that family will be supreme, that family will be ascendant, that there will be no other power more powerful than the family, and that the act of disempowering a family, the fact that the act of breaking family apart will become far more difficult. Become far more difficult. J. just as much good, just as much learning, just as much understanding, just as much of any of these things come out of what we would laughingly call bad family than come from what we would today call good family. Families that basically do what they're told. Families need to be more self-reliant. Families need to think more expansively about what they're going to do for their children, even their adult children. Sometimes I find myself doing the same thing now that I have adult children about where I need to live and the circumstances I need to be in so that I can care for my children or provide opportunities for them to marry and to start their own family, you know, knowing that I can't control that circumstance, but my children are probably going to need more time, you know, the whole option, and require maybe a little bit more time. And so, that's kind of what I'm getting involved in. That's kind of what I'm worried about and what I'm trying to do. And we may need to be one of those cavaliers and say, you know what? If the answer is, we're not going to get involved in that. I want individual families to do what they can. If an individual family, like, let's say, take Shetland. I think I am drawn to Shetland because it is a place where this can happen. It can become a model of how this needs to be. We need to set up more associations to produce things. And we need to be careful about that production. You know, if you're going to put in a leisure center, because everybody who goes to that leisure center needs to contribute to it. That way, when that leisure center becomes less interesting, when it becomes too expensive to pay for, when people are just suffering for, you know, when we can't afford to keep playing here or gold, and it shuts down, it's them making that decision. It's not made by some large, grand, you know, people from above who say, well, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. It needs to be done from below, every time. Every time. And when a family leaves that place, their obligation to it goes away too. That way, families get far more interested in these things, whether it's in saying, we're going to leave here, we're going to go to some place that's more, you know, a bigger place that has more employment opportunities for our family. You go, you know, nobody should ever feel that. Encourage people that want to go to smaller places. I'm one of those folks who wants to go for a smaller place and who doesn't mind putting forth the effort needed and being a little bit more of, hey, you know, do I need to raise a garden? Yeah. You know, do I need to do this thing or that thing? Oh, yeah. To make this stuff happen. Okay, checking to make sure how much stuff that I've got the stuff I need. There it is. 20 things. About 20 bucks. And it's hard to get to. You know? So the next time you just do it yourself. So that's what I would do. And that's the kind of person that you need, because people who congregate into large, you know, large places, into large cities, want to compartmentalize themselves. You know, want to say, I want to be able to do this, I want to be able to do that. I don't, you know, I don't want to have to handle this, I don't want to have to handle this. But I'm the kind of guy who says, you know what, every time I let somebody else do something, I'm so frustrated with it, I walk away and I go, you know what, I just don't, you know, I had a plumber, actually it was his assistant, come in and do some work for me. And after it was done and I saw what they did, I was so angry. Because I did. I said, you know what? This is stupid. I could have done that. I thought you guys were going to do a good job. This is a patch job. I could have done a tricky patch job. And then I found out that that's basically how this stuff gets handled now. It's through tricky patch jobs. And you go, you know what? I can do that. You go, why am I paying you to do this? You know? So that's what brings me back to family sovereignty, the title of family ascendancy, or the ascendant family. And what the ascendant family needs, mostly needs to be left alone. Mostly needs to be able to handle what it can handle. And go out and look for other resources it needs through other means. You know, it does need to have a larger, you know, smothering government cocoon to protect it, to a large extent, protect itself. You know, what the nuclear family can't do, the extended family can help with. Anyway, so that's kind of where I see on all that stuff, and I'm getting close to my destination on some level. Actually, let's slow down. I'm going too fast. It all brings me back to what I've been doing. So I hope you're not too offended in listening to this and going, gee whiz, Jay, all you're doing is talking around the same question. And you go, well, you know, I'm talking about a book, and I'm trying to kind of coalesce my thoughts about how the book is going to go and how it needs to be written and what examples are going to be. Are we going to have a whole section on just math schooling and about how one handles math schooling? And you go, you know, the family school needs. When I got the last things that I was concerned about at all, when I last touched child development, when I last touched the child care industry, was that I was constantly telling people, you need to think about family. There is legislative structure. The law allows for family daycare homes. They can't be very big, you know. The biggest one you can have is 12. And I was doing an abstraction of that. I was actually teaching those who do child family daycare homes. And the fact that these are the best way to accomplish the goal of children need a safe place and a nurturing place to be. They were very lightly regulated at all, and parents were really the determining factor of whether that was a good situation or not. I am much more totally unlike letting your neighbor or your friend take care of your kids at all times. You know, so I'm sorry. I am very much about mothers taking care of families, about you know, staying at home and taking care of those things. About children learning from them, even if it's just basic homemaking and contributing to the family. That is so important. I don't mind having something like a school. It's just that parents need to be in charge of it. Parents need to be able to dictate to it. Right now, the thing we have now, it's impossible. It can't be done. It's always going to be done by such a large entity that kind of pushes down on education. And the parents are simply supposed to, serve that, families almost end up serving those kinds of things, The state needs this to happen, the state needs that to happen, and it always ends up being families forced to sacrifice themselves to make that happen. And it's time for a pushback to say, families say no. And that families can always say no. And it's always within their ability to say no. And we need to make sure that when families say no, they also have a good selection of other opportunities where they can say, I want to do it this way. And that's fine. To expand the ability of families while ripping to shreds the abilities of any other instrumentality. The only thing an individual person should have to be beholden to, that society should say, no, you, there is an entity that is larger than you, that's more important than you, that you need to contribute to, is the family. And beyond that, there is nothing. All power flows to the family. The great part is, people say, that just means that your father's too powerful. And you go, no, society already has a way of doing that. When you become an adult and you can take care of yourself and you can take care of your needs, you form your own family. And it's usually before you're really capable of all these things, that's fine. We already have set up a structure and an ability to be able to do that. It's called marriage. That's why you can't let gay people take marriage, because I'm sorry. They, even if government says that's okay, that it's a reasonable substitute, it's not. It cannot be on any level. And I guess that's why I'm so weird about, hey, gays are selfish people who are looking to destroy the family, and I'm sorry. I for one will be one that will defend the family and say, sorry, you can't have it. Even if the government gives it to you, you will never have my respect. You will never have my respect ever. I don't care what the government does. I don't care if they shove it down our throat. I won't do it. I won't be forced to marry. I won't, if they say, you're a bishop and you're forced to consummate gay marriages, or you are forced to officiate over gay marriages, then I will not be a bishop. I will not be a bishop. The Mormon Church left one branch. Sorry. I won't do it. I won't do it. I quit that job for some kind of larger reason. Sorry, I made a covenant with God. I can't do it. I won't do it. I won't break it. I would rather have the church go down the plane as an institution. Boy, isn't that jerky of me? But you know what? That's just the way it is, and that's just the kind of guy I am. And if that means that I need to be this great leader, I need to do this, whether it is to buy an island in Scotland where a lord, where a laird has lots of power to dictate how things are going to go you know, who can build, who can come, who can't, stuff like that. If that's what's necessary, that's what I'll do. Whether it's, you know, camera, or, well, it's not really a camera, just like, you know. As these structures fall apart, and as they turn to great people to say, will you please govern us, will you please rule over us, because we don't know how to take care of ourselves, we go, you will be taking care of yourself. You will be taking care of your family. Because I'm going to get rid of every other instrumentality that will try to take over that responsibility. It will go away. It will go away. You will have to do it. And if you can't, you know, tough. Your neighbors will have to help you. And they will be resentful. And they will be upset because they have enough problems on their plate already without you being a problem. That means you're going to have to fix up your relationship with your parents. You're going to have to start, even if you had bad blood between you and your brothers and sisters, you're going to have to figure out a way to solve that. You're going to have to fix that because these are the people you're going to have strength with. Because I'm not going to help you with that. Because other instrumentalities can help you with that. You're going to need to turn to them. And if you turn to the government and you don't like the way the government treats you, you know what? Tough freaking luck, because that's who you're turning to. Now, I don't know what kind of branch president I'm going to be if it happens. But I think people will by and large see what's needed. And I want to help authentically needy people, because that's my first criteria, is to determine your need. And if you really don't have a need, I'm not going to help you. Because, you know, if, you know, and says everybody has needs, and we're going to determine what they are. Now, what kind of help I'm going to offer is going to be determined by your need. And if it ends up being, you know, and it's not some kind of insurance policy, and I've seen bishops to treat it that way, and say, well, you know, they've been contributing to fast offerings, therefore they should be able to pull from it. I understand the mentality, but I'm sorry, it's not the insurance program. It's not your personal insurance program. It's not what it's there for. Otherwise, you've been getting a tax break that you don't deserve. You know? It was a charitable contribution to use for other people. Do whatever it takes to take care of your family. Whatever's needed, you guys are going to do it. And that means you're going to have to be kind of hard on you. I'm going to have to be kind of hard. Harsh. And difficult. And people will say, man, he just demands a lot. You go, yes. Because I work for God. God is demanding. God is demanding. If you've got a big screen TV and you say your kids are starving, it says, I will bring the truck and help you take it down to the pawn shop so that you can sell it so you can feed your family. You got it? You understand? See what's going on? So that we help each other. We take care of each other. But you cannot be a sponge. You cannot be a sponge. We can't tolerate it. We can't tolerate it in society to have anybody being sponging off of stuff. If you need help with food, we're going to help you. You know? And I don't think we need to do this in a lackluster sort of way. You know, or in some kind of a structured way. I am firmly against the structured way of doing it. That's how schools got to be the way they are. We decided to introduce structure into something that should have just been left at some level. You know, somewhere between where we are now and the itinerant school teacher that's begging for food, somewhere between those two places, more tending toward the itinerant teacher begging for food, needed to be done. And whatever this guy was hoping to teach needed to have some better standing than just that they went to college and learned classroom management. I don't approve of that at all. Sorry. And I guess that's why I made a bad decision. And frankly, I didn't want to do any better. Is that pretty evil of me? I didn't purport to be any better than that right there. So. Anyway, so this is, Glenn South, this is Jason Nemro, and you are listening to The Far Side of the Moon, and I guess I've come to grips with the fact that I'm going to have to be a leader, whether it is a circumstantial leader, or whether people elect me to one of those positions, but we have to be clear. We have to be clear, and we have to do all those things, you know. If government wants to regulate institutions, have a good time. Enjoy it. Love it. Live it. But every single law has to have a family release valve. Has to have a family house. Has to have a thing where the family can simply say no. And that you just have to stand back and go, you know what? Family's sovereign. You know? Whether it is adding on to your house and they say, oh no, you've got to do it this way or this way or this way or this way, there's got to be a little thing that says, hello, I'm playing the family fund. I own this land, therefore I can do it without seeking any permission, and I can do it any way I feel about it. And they have to back off. Oh, okay, that's right. Now, you can be all weird about it. Whenever you try to sell that, you know, you're not going to be able to get loans because those loans are what certain way. That's fine. That's just fine. Okay? So I don't have any problem with that. But every single law has to have a family out that says, I don't have to. I'm not responsible. The only out the family can't take are in taxes. And some other things, you know. But you've always got to say, you know, where's the family at? It's got to be there. You cannot have any form of legislation that doesn't have a family at. If they go, well, we've already written too much legislation down, you go, well, then fine. The family can opt out of all of the legislation that's already been written. All of it. All of every single stinking benefit. They can go, you know, they can go, you know what, I can buy a car and I can drive down the road without a few lights. You can't do that. And you go, ha ha, yes you can. Yes they can. You know that, or you're going to have to go through a whole lot of work to figure out how there can be a family opt out. It's either got to be reclassified as a tax, just because families only have to pay tax. And that way you can't hide things, you can't hide any of that. Because now you can punish, you can be punitive toward corporations all you want. And I think I talked about this.
What that? Because I need to get back to the movie. This is Jason Nemro. You're listening to The Far Side of the Moon. If you'd like to know more and look at some of the things I'm working on, everything can be accessed through the website at qix.me. And we're gonna be working hard to try to make this thing a reality, whether it's, you know, because I don't think I want to myself run for an office. If other people say, Jay, we want you to come forward as a candidate. I says, you have to understand, this is me. This is me, and I will not compromise. I will not step back. I will not do anything but this. You know? And if you think you're going to get me in there and you're going to try to kowtow me and you're going to say, oh, you're going to ride this, but we're going to make sure you can't do it, you're going to be sorely mistaken that I will not be beholden to you. And I will not run under a party that demands that I live by its teaching. So I won't do it. You know? Family first. And that's a bad thing. It's been co-opted by too many government programs, so I don't like it. The Ascendant Family. This is J. Nemrohevich.